You are listening to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast. I'm your host, Tyus France. Sitting across from me, as always, is Alex. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tyus.
Where have you been? I know you've been traveling.
Oh, I went to Connecticut to see some family, and I've gone up to Tonopah, a few other cities in Nevada, and next week I'll be in Washington, D.C., actually, taking a class from the Leadership Institute.
Wonderful. So, the moment we stopped recording last week, of course, tragedy struck, and I shouldn't say tragedy, events that were so newsworthy, they were almost inescapable hit, and I went, man, that's incredible content, and now there's more and more and more and more stuff to talk about. So we're going to go back in time a little bit because the big rally in Charlottesville took place, which kind of became a spinoff to other rallies that took place, which has somehow turned into a war that doesn't make sense. So we now have a war where it is free speech seems to be fighting against racism and vice versa, which are not opposing forces. So for some reason, everybody wants free speech. Yep, of course. And for some reason, everybody doesn't want racism, which, yeah, that makes sense too. And by circumstance or insanity, we now have these two sides against each other. So one of those sides is this group called Antifa. And I don't know a ton about Antifa, besides what I've looked up online. From what I understand, they kind of started off in the Berkeley protests, is what I think is where they kind of sprung up on. And they their name looks like it comes from the anti-fascist idea. That's where Antifa, anti-fascist, comes from. So during the Berkeley protests, they were seen throwing Molotov cocktails and smashing windows, which is, you know, far from an anti-protest. That's inciting violence. That is violence. That's not something that I'm going to say is an okay thing to do. There was the 82nd Avenue of Roses parade. There was some threats made. Quote, they said, "You've seen how much power we have downtown, and the police cannot stop us from shutting down roads. Please consider your decision wisely." So they basically made an anonymous email with that threat in there, saying, you know, or else. And that shut down the 82nd annual Roses Parade. So that brings us to Charlottesville. So the evening before Charlottesville, they had this parade, a really, really bad idea of a parade. And I think maybe, just for the positive intent side of this, maybe they were going for the candlelit visual kind of idea of it. But they ended up with tiki torches. Tiki torches are not particularly great weapons, but they really look like torches. And so a bunch of guys walking through a town carrying torches is a terrible idea. And that's exactly what they did. They were also, what was the actual event over? Was it a free speech situation
for Charlottesville?
Yeah. What did it start with?
I actually think that it was organized as a white supremacist, organized march.
Was it a white supremacist specifically?
Well, okay. I should back up. So we're going to play a semantics game here, of course.
Yeah.
But I believe that officially it was organized as a white nationalist event. So you can see it as, bear with me, this isn't necessarily my opinion, but from what I've been explained, the difference between the two is that supremacists believe they're better. Nationalists is just like a celebration, if you will, of white culture, whatever that is.
Okay. I apparently it was officially dubbed Unite the Right. So it was an alt-right thing, apparently.
And, yeah, but and that's really their like rallying cry.
That was their early
preserve white culture thing. I haven't seen necessarily the supremacist thing, but for sure, like the organizers definitely wanted it to be an alt-right white nationalist. Sorry, I keep misusing my terms, but white nationalist movement.
Mm-hmm. And so they had members of the neo-Nazis were there. They had the KKK were there, and the alt-right, which I guess were the organizers primarily, were there. And they came heavily armed. They were ready to be attacked. So they came very, very heavily armed, semi-automatic machine guns, things like that. And this pre-walk of carrying torches, so anyways, pretty bad idea to begin with there. But from a libertarian standpoint, protecting free speech, you've got to say even people with bad ideas have to have the right to speak or you lose your right to speak. So at a certain level, I hate the idea, but I have to defend the Constitution, the First Amendment, which is within there. On the other hand, other people feel that just the speech itself is an act of violence. So people did show up with baseball bats, pepper spray, and basically had a small attack against their rally. Their rally was actually attacked pretty much earlier by the permits they got. They tried to do this all legally and above board. So they went out and got permits. The permits were then pulled by the city because the city was terrified that they were going to be a violent situation taking place. City was right. So they pulled the permits. That was overturned, saying, hey, you can't do that. That violates the First Amendment. So they got their permits back. And then there was some attacks, some baseball bats, some pepper spray. Surprisingly, during that, because like I said, the alt-right was heavily armed. No bullets were fired, from what I understand. Nobody was shot. So that's impressive. However, somebody was killed when a car basically went careening into some people. There's a bunch of arguments as far as what happened. There is video of that car being hit by a baseball bat. Whether that was why the car was zooming off, it doesn't really matter. What matters is violence took place here. That it started off as a rally, violence took place. Antifa showed up. They were the violence on the other side of it, and there was also tons of people there counter-protesting that were not violent, and I think that's really important. There was tons of people that were rallying that were not violent, and those are both really important points, because while some people took to violence, that was not an act that everyone took to, and it becomes a very slippery slope when you say, well, one person was killed because this guy had a car. If you then lump everybody together, you can say, well, then everybody alt-right is a murderer. Or you can go, everybody with a car is a murderer. You can start clumping all these people together until the point where it gets absolutely crazy. So I'm going to move on to some other rallies, unless you want to say something on Charlottesville.
I mean, I just want to point out that I think that there are a lot of very complex issues there. I would say that if you boiled this issue down to, you know, the smallest common denominator, you have the issue of free speech and where that goes. And of course, the law of the land by Supreme Court decision at the moment is that free speech ends where imminent violence, clear and present imminent violence is to occur. So a rally in and of itself, whether or not they could say anything they want, as hating as they want to be, it doesn't pass a Supreme Court constitutional test for inciting violence, right? It's when physical violence or a threat of physical violence becomes possible. That is when, you know, and I honestly think that this is such a tough issue. I don't know that, I honestly think that that's probably a decent, you know, restriction. I know I would love to live in a world where everything was free speech, but the only way that could happen is if everything was private property, and then you could just rely on the private property owners to enforce their definition of free speech. But as long as we have public land owned by the people, I think that it's important that we extend free speech as far as we can. We give everyone the benefit of the doubt that they're going to have a peaceful vigil or protest or whatever. And only when it crosses the threshold of an imminent danger, which again, gray area, yes, but again, the Supreme Court has given some guidance over the 20th century as to what that entails. You know, a lot of people very miscorrectly, you know, say that the Supreme Court decision that's the law of the land is the screaming fire in a crowded theater that was overturned in the 70s.
Was that overturned? I didn't know that.
It was. So I actually looked this up as a result of this.
You know, Penn and Teller in their show specifically do a bit around that where he's juggling torches, catches it on the wrong end and starts screaming fire, fire. And then he goes, see, you can do that.
Yep. And you can. And Penn Jillette for... he is just brilliant. He researches everything. He's an extremely intelligent guy. So shout out to Penn. And Penn and Teller, I love their show because they go over such complex issues. And they do it in what I think is a meaningful way. But, you know, again, back to the main issue here, is people have to know that we have made some probably, I would say, very important steps to over the 20th century, roll back free speech. Because again, the fire in a crowded theater decision was used to prevent the Socialist Party from handing out Dodge the Draft petitions.
Okay, do the story.
I'm sorry.
No. You just have to lay that out as a story. So what was going on, and then why did that end up being that way?
So just like in Russia and in other areas of the world, America had its own socialist movement, and I would say that they're pretty big and growing today, but at the time they were probably kind of peaking for the 20th century, and basically one of the ways they wanted to encourage people to participate in civil disobedience is by dodging the draft, which is of course a requirement for compulsory military service. Now, interestingly, this is something that a libertarian might advocate for, that the draft should not exist and that there should be no force for somebody to have to participate in military action.
At what time is this? Is this Cold War? Is this what we're freaking out over?
This is World War
II. Okay.
Yeah, so remember that in World War II, there was a very tenuous coalition of socialists and capitalists to defeat fascists. It was presumed that fascism as a political ideology was worse than communism as an economic ideology. So the decision was made, and you might argue one way or another historically, and you're welcome to write, I'm sure you can get your PhD off of this kind of thing, but you know, the important distinction here is that was a coalition that was formed very temporarily to defeat fascism, but as soon as that was over, as soon as there was no common enemy of Germany and Nazi Germany particularly, then you saw the economic war, right, between communism, socialism, if you will, and since true communism's never been tried, Tyus, and capitalism.
Yeah. But, different words, same thing.
But importantly, right, extremes. We had a socialist party here, mm-hmm. and people forget that. Like that, you know, they don't realize the McCarthyism and all of the things that were done to eliminate the free speech and the rights of the socialists to pass out their propaganda.
So you were saying that the socialists were passing out propaganda in theaters?
Well, they were passing out propaganda, and they were doing it with Dodge the Draft propaganda particularly. Now, the fire... Now, of course, whenever the Supreme Court hears a case, they hear multiple cases, right? Usually summed up into one. So I believe this was one such one, and I'm sure there might be some other ways that you can go into that. But the important thing is that... this decision was overturned in the 70s. What the Supreme Court realized after this decision was that it really, really reduced the First Amendment. And they realized that the First Amendment was meant to be the First Amendment. It's the most important. There's a reason it's listed first. The freedom of speech should not be reduced because you don't like what they're saying. And that's what had happened here, Tyus, is... because you didn't like the idea that they might incite panic or whatever, they decided to, in the 70s, give... And then, again, there were several cases leading up to this, and you can go read the full history in almost any Supreme Court textbook. But essentially, they continued to refine the definition of what it means to have an imminent danger. There's like a test now that judges are allowed to use to decide, is this really an imminent threat? Is this really an imminent danger to people and to public safety? In that instance, then free speech can be restricted.
So, like, if somebody's out there and they're screaming blood and soil, while that might be related to Nazis and the oppression of Jews, and actually the death of many Jews, that's still not an actual, that's not the statement of, hey, let's all go out there and kill Jewish people.
Yes. Now, you can be well-armed and you can have a rally, if you will, with tiki torches and march around and this sort of thing. But if it's done in a peaceful manner, then there should be no reason to disrupt it on the government side of things. And on the government side of things, the when you do intervene is when it does either become violent or it's about to become violent. So if all of a sudden they decide they're going to rush the courthouse, you know, that's when the free speech is over. You know, but there has to be a clear and imminent threat it has to be a specific threat, if I'm remembering correctly. So it's not enough to say, well, I hate white people and I wish they were all dead, or I hate black people and I wish they were all dead. It has to be a specific threat, like I'm going to plant a bomb in this, you know, black neighborhood, or I'm going to, you know, shoot this judge. It has to be something where that's no longer free speech, and that's why you can't, you know, but yelling fire, you can yell fire all you want, and most people, once they realize there's no fire, are going to go, look at this asshole, you know? And that's the thing, is you yell fire in a theater, but guess what? The theater's not government property. Well, most aren't. Most are privately owned. You yell fire in a theater, they're going to just kick you out because you're disrupting people. I mean, it has nothing to do with your free speech. It has to do with private property. And this is why I think from a libertarian perspective, the argument for private property is so strong and so compelling, is that the same free speech restrictions that people so desperately want can only be achieved with private property ownership. For example, you can't come into my home and have a white nationalist rally. Sorry, it's my home. But because there's public-owned land, you can do it there. Because, again, we can't allow the government to begin to decide what's morally right. That's not something that the Founding Fathers would roll in their graves if they thought that that was happening. And unfortunately, I think you and I have both talked about this before, we're kind of in that slippery slope.
Oh, yeah. It's, yeah, we're rolling downhill right now. So there's so many directions I want to take this, but let's go back to some of these rallies, because I think some of them are important. Before I get off of Charlottesville, I'm kind of curious on your opinion as far as where all these white supremacists came from. I've heard a few different arguments, and I've heard one that, well, Trump is a white supremacist, which, by the way, if he were, he'd probably say it. So I've heard once we had white supremacists in office, suddenly it became okay for everybody to come out of the shadows. I've heard that argument. I've heard a second one is that they were just hiding out for years and years and years. We've had all these neo-Nazis around us, but we just never knew it. And then the third that I've heard is that so many people have been called Nazis lately, because if you say anything that isn't aligned with the left, they just jump and say, well, you're being a Nazi. And so now people are just being like, well, if you think I'm being a Nazi, well, I'll just put the swastika on my arm because you're being ridiculous. So I've heard those three arguments, all three of which do not sound like good arguments to me. And I don't have another excuse. I don't have another outcome besides maybe the fact that perhaps that was all of them. Like maybe it is a very small population, but that was about as big of an organization as they could make. What do you think? Where are these coming from?
I mean, certainly I don't know, but I would surmise that like all political and social movements, they rarely ever die out. So you still find people who think the earth is flat, even today. But you still find, I know that these things sound like conspiracy theories, but there is a small group of people that think that there's some global conspiracy about the food, about the water, about the air, about whether the earth's even fucking round. I mean, you can find these groups of people, no matter how absurd. I mean, some that we would all, like all of us, put our hands in and say that that's ridiculous. And yet you'll still find these groups of people. So I think that the white nationalists, or even if I might go so far as the white supremacist movement, never died out. In fact, it's always been there. It's always been alive and it's always been kicking. But the advantage of their advantage now is the internet. I think that the internet allows people to connect in a wonderful and marvelous way. And sometimes that wonderful, marvelous way can be terrifying because, again, the same internet that brought together everyone that all your loved ones and your family and friends on Facebook and this sort of thing, it brings together terrorists, it brings together white supremacist movements, it brings together bomb makers, it puts, instructions for how to do these sorts of things on the internet.
But the thing you can't do is you can't say, well, let's censor the internet or let's censor the speech, right? And
I, of course not.
And yeah, you're not suggesting that.
I would never.
You're not suggesting that, but I think it's important to point that out because many people are moving in the direction of let's limit free speech. Let's make sure these technologies can't be encrypted, so that that's not a possibility. And one of the powerful things around freedom of association, we don't like Nazis associating with Nazis, right? But one of the important and powerful things about freedom of association is it also grants you freedom to not associate. It gives you the right to not have to be with these people that you find atrocious. You can just say, you know what? I'm not going to be a part of that. I'm not going to support that. I refuse to. And if you take away freedom of association, it lumps us all together where suddenly you are forced to associate with those people. Let's move on to some other rallies that took place. So following shortly after the Charlottesville one is we had a Patriot Prayer Rally in San Francisco. So the interesting thing on the Patriot Prayer Rally was that the counter protest on that was kind of unique. What they decided to do was they found out where this group got permits to go, and they basically put out information out there to say, hey, go walk your dog in this area, make sure the dog poos there, and that way the ralliers will have to step in dog shit. That was the way of addressing it. Now, that's at a really thin level, that's really kind of funny, right? And if you just take it there, it is really funny. It's, you know, oh, you mean dog poop's really not going to harm somebody overall. But this is, again, setting up that interesting slippery slope thing. And so I found this post online where these people are talking about it. It starts off by just putting it up there and making kind of fun of the idea. And then it gets into a relatively serious back and forth, which in the end showed kind of a leftist agenda that was particularly dark. So I'm going to read this post. So the first person that actually makes this kind of serious is, he says, exposing thousands of people to hazardous bacteria and blatantly ignoring EPA warnings about the environmental impact it causes. So his point is, yeah, okay, even though this is kind of funny, you are making an unsafe choice for the environment for these people as far as bacteria is concerned. And then he gets countered by them saying, well, they're going to pick it up afterwards, man. And he goes back and forth. Anyways, it gets to the point where he says, fair enough. I just wanted to hear that you were willing to endanger others, suppress the right to suppress their right to protect and go against the EPA when it's convenient to you. And they said, well, when it's Nazis, yes. So basically what they say is everything's fine up until the point where I find it wrong. And once I find it wrong, suddenly the ethics are out. So they go, you know, it is wrong to hurt the environment. It is wrong to potentially put others in harm's way. But you know what? When it's Nazis, when it's somebody I don't like, then it's okay to do. And that's exactly the slippery slope that we were talking about. That's exactly what happened with this one. It's a minor event. Patriot Prayer was the theme of the rally. Basically, a ton of these rallies right after Charlottesville sprung up, and there's some interesting thought as far as why and where they sprung up. So this Patriot Prayer one sprung up in San Francisco, which is an incredibly left-leaning place. So there are people that believe that what's happening here is they are creating these rallies, and they're putting it under a blanket of free speech or open religion, whatever the case may be. And they're not allowing white supremacists in at this point, but they're kind of hinting at it in hopes that they get counter protests to show up to make the counter protesters look bad. Especially if the counter protesters act violently. Another example of this was the one in Boston, which was specifically a free speech rally. And I ended up writing a bunch of stuff online about this particular rally because everything I could find about it was that the free speech rally, they had black people at the rally. There was no KKK, no Nazis, no alt-right. None of them were allowed to be there. When I dug a little bit further, it had turned out that they did have somebody who was an alt-right speaker that was going to be there earlier. This rally got completely overrun. The anti-protesters, I think there was different reports where it was like 20,000 to 40,000 people. And there was less than 100 people at the rally. So massively overrun by the counter-protesters. The counter-protesters did attack people. There were several incidences of violence. There was many injuries that took place. Nothing big. A lot. And what was interesting, too, is that the media reported that this is how it should be done, that the counter-protesters protested, and then it came to an end. Well, the counter-protesters actually acted violently, so it's not how it should ever be done. But there might be something taking place here where violence is being incited by the other side almost to make them look bad. So maybe this Boston Free Speech Rally, perhaps they intentionally invited this person, then canceled it. They had black speakers there to make them look like, hey, we're completely innocent. And then when they started acting violently, suddenly they could point the finger at all these people on the left and see, basically say, look, it's them. They're the ones that are truly violent. They're the ones that are truly fascist, which is a really, really interesting approach. And it's also an approach that we have seen before. So I'm going to bring up a video, going to get real fancy here. And I'm going to bring up a video about the election. This was taking place while Trump was campaigning. And this is about how during Trump rallies, they intentionally, apparently, brought in violence just to be able to report on it. So here you go. I'm going to play it up in the upper thirds here. Maybe.
Like operatives hired political activists working in coordination with the DNC to instigate violence and incite reactions at Trump rallies. And in one of the undercover videos, Scott Fovell, a subcontractor for a DNC-hired firm called Democracy Partners, supposedly explains just how he does it. According to the undercover videos, it was this man the Democratic National Committee turned to organize the work. Bob Kramer is the husband of Illinois Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky. He's part of a group called Democracy Partners, and he too was caught on undercover video. Here explaining how he was hired by the Democratic National Committee to stage counter demonstrations and press conferences wherever the Trump campaign showed up. Both the DNC and the Clinton campaign deny any coordination with anything involving the incitement of violence.
Okay, so I bring that video up not because that might not be what's happening here at all, but I want to bring it up as a possible. It's clearly happened in the past, and we're not talking about like distant past. That's relatively recent. And I guess the moral of the story is the only way to overcome this on either side is to be the nonviolent one, to not be the aggressor. What are your thoughts?
I think you exactly hit the nail on the head there, Tyus. We need more Dr. Kings. We need less Malcolm X's. I mean, when we're talking about the movement for civil rights, it's obviously an emotionally charged issue. Passions run deep. Anger. There's a lot of anger on every side. But we have to remember that, you know, the leaders we should be idolizing are the ones that led peaceful protests and counter-protests, in fact. Even when they were being sprayed down by police and dogs were being unleashed, they were unwavering in their use of nonviolence. And those are the people that I think we need to be emulating. And not just for libertarians, but for all people who are protesting. There's a lot to protest in this country. We incarcerate more people than any other country in the world. And that includes North Korea. I mean, it's just kind of absurd, right? And continue to fail our children by shoving them into a failing, you know, educational system. And there's just so many examples of real things that we should be protesting and taking a stance on. And, you know, as much as these protests are a symbol of strength and a symbol of unity and a symbol of the community coming together, the most important way that you could actually get involved and make change is to get involved politically. These decisions get made by politicians, judges, legislators every year. And if you don't get involved, if you stand idly by, and even if you go to protests and you're a nonviolent protester, nothing will change until we start to change the system.
So if our listeners wanted to get involved, how would you suggest they do so?
You know, the easiest way for people that are wanting to get involved with the Libertarian Party of Nevada, just go to our website, sign up, and if you go to lpnevada.org/volunteer, you can sign up to volunteer, and we'll get in contact with you. We do monthly days of action. We had one just this last Saturday. We had quite a few people there helping us make mailers for fundraising and this sort of thing. I think next month we're going to do phone banking and reaching out to people and finding out, hey, what is it that you would like to do and this sort of thing? What do you want to see changed in Nevada state law? But this is how real change takes place, right? It's through the political process. We can protest till we're blue in the face, but all that's going to do is be a news cycle for 24 to 48 hours, and then after that, it's everyone's forgotten. I mean, I bet you if you pulled up some of the stuff that we were talking about 6 months ago, people would be like, huh? I mean, I think we were talking about things like transgender bathrooms and airlines, dragging customers. I mean, if you talked about these things now, people would be like, oh, that seems so dumb now to make such a national outcry about. You know what I mean? I'm not saying the media couldn't do it, but...
Wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah.
So let's wrap it up on that note. We would love to have your participation out there, but until next time, please make it all about freedom.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.